Thank you very much.
Hey, Tom?
Yes.
Are you with us? Hello, this is the Tangerine Dream Team Show. I'm glad to have you, Tom Lodge.
Glad to be here.
I am so happy to talk to you since we had you. You gave us a wonderful presentation at the birthday party.
Yeah, that was fun, yes.
Oh, yeah. And I know that you're here to talk about the now and the past. And
sure.
In front of me, I'm looking at your flyer about the book called The Ship That Rocked the World.
I have that book coming out soon, my new book about Radio Caroline.
Yes.
You know, that song you just played of the Yardbirds, in pre-Easter Sunday 1964, that kind of music was not allowed in the UK. The BBC wouldn't play that kind of music. They called it too black, too native. I mean, they used to have in America what they called race stations, which played black music, but then that slowly broke through. But in England, it was just not allowed. Even if it was white people playing that kind of music, it wasn't allowed.
And you got it go. Or you had an afternoon audience that would listen to all the.
Well, we were on 24 hours a day. We went on the air Easter Sunday 1964.
Oh.
And then from a ship, we put a ship in international waters, and we just started to broadcast to the UK. And then eventually we had two ships, one off the Isle of Man, which covered the north part of England, and one off the
southeast England
corner. And so we covered the whole of the UK with these two ships, and they were broadcasting at 50,000 watts.
Did you know the founder, Ronan?
Oh, yes, very well. Well, what happened was one day I was working for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation as a correspondent, and I walked into this pub once in Chelsea on the King's Road, and this is before Radio Caroline, and the music was playing something like Perry Como, What Did Delaware, or some corny song like that.
Oh, really?
I commented to the bartender, that's pretty awful music you got playing there. And he said, well, that's the best we got. And then this young Irishman who was just sitting at the bar suddenly piped out and said, well, we're going to be changing that very soon. I said, how are you going to do that? He said, we got a ship off the coast. We're going to start broadcasting. I said, really? I said, do you need any DJs?
Yeah.
And that was how I got my job on Radio Caroline. Just happened to meet him in the bar, and he was looking for more people to go out on and live on the ship.
And you had a lot of broadcasts using, what is it called, Continental Electronics transmitters?
Yes. Our transmitter was made by Continental, which is made in the U.S., and
yep.
We were 50,000 watts.
Oh, 50,000 watts.
Yeah, so we really went far. And when you broadcast from water, your actual signal is stronger than if you broadcast from land.
Aye.
So we had a really two really powerful radio stations that, you see, if it hadn't been for Radio Caroline, you wouldn't have had the Yardbirds, the Kinks, the Who, the Hollies, the Rolling Stones, all these bands, you wouldn't have had them. So we created the British invasion of America.
And in 64 you joined, is that correct?
Yeah,
and wasn't there some kind of act?
In August the 14th, 1967, the British government put through a new bill and made a new law called the Marine Offences Broadcast Act, which made it illegal for a British subject to assist such an operation, in other words, give it food, records, fuel or work on it. And so by 67, there were 10 stations all around the coast. There was Britain Radio, Radio England 390, Radio Scotland, Radio City. There was all these different radio stations all the way around the coast. And they all closed down except the two Radio Caroline stations. And what Ronan did, the founder of Radio Caroline, is he He operated Radio Caroline South out of Amsterdam and Radio Caroline North out of Dublin, Ireland. And he opened advertising offices in New York, Toronto, Paris, and Tokyo, and only hired non-British, so that would be American, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, and so on. And that way he could stay on the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you like it once you started? Did you have to learn it as you went, or were you already a seaman?
I had learnt radio in Canada with the CBC, mm-hmm. and I'd been a disc jockey in Canada, and so I knew how to do the whole system. But when I got onto the ship, I found that they were still doing the old way of having an announcer in a booth and having somebody operating the records. And I thought, what are you guys, BBC or something? No, you. If you're going to be the announcer, you got to operate the records. And I showed them how to DJ, how to slip the records and so on. And we had what they call cart machines, which was tapes for the commercials and jingles and so on. And so I showed them how to create that 50-style American sort of sound that was really, really strong over here, but didn't exist in England.
Uh-huh, because you had been born in England and moved to the U.S., then
yeah.
moved to Canada. And
yeah.
weren't you, having had a music background
yeah.
and been a musician yourself, you had kind of an idea of what should be played anyway, and what was I going to say with that?
Well, we had a very positive attitude, so we encourage open, sort of positive type music, and we created a platform where creativity in the UK was encouraged, because before that there was no way you could get in to being a performer unless you kowtowed to the old system. And we created a platform where anything and everything was possible. So suddenly all these young kids who had been secretly sort of playing and practicing in their bedrooms suddenly started to create records.
Uh-huh.
And we played this. So it opened up this huge area that had been repressed by the BBC and the establishment of the British government.
You'd been part of training kids in a music school and training music
yeah.
engineers also.
That's right. After I left Radio Caroline, I went to Canada, and I joined a college in London, Ontario, called Fanshawe College, and I created a training there for recording engineers and record producers called Music Industry Arts. It was the first such training in the world. Up until that time, if you wanted to get into that field, you worked in a studio bringing coffee and sweeping the floor and slowly sort of learning how to do whatever field you were in. And at that time, before Music Industry Arts, the engineers were technicians and the record producers were salesmen. And I said, no, they've both got to be musicians. So one of the criteria getting in the course is you had to pass an audition. And I was looking specifically for musicians who'd been on the road, played in bars, were not the academic kind of musicians, but the sort of out there in the field musicians. And those were the students I brought into the course to be trained to be recording engineers and record producers.
I've got a theme song here. I want to play the theme song that you would play, I guess, maybe while you were there before, Caroline by the Fortunes?
Sure.
Okay, see if I can get that.
We could always use your donations, however large or
apologies.
Small. Santa Cruz. Make checks payable to...
For some reason, YouTube... It's playing, but we don't hear it.
Okay.
Anyway. Here it goes.
Oh, there you go.
Caroline, Caroline.
that's great.
Wow. Yeah, about what year was that?
Oh, that was would be 1965, in there somewhere, 65, 66. And the interesting thing is why the station was called Caroline.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, what happened was when Ronan O'Reilly, now you got to remember, this guy is just a kid. He's 22 years old. When he started trying to make it, he was about 20. When he went on the air, he was 24. And he had got the ship going. He'd got the money. They were rigging out the ship in a harbor in Ireland, and he was flying over to America to finalize the deal for the Continental transmitter. And on board there was a Life magazine, and he was reading the Life magazine. And there was a picture about John Kennedy. And the picture was John Kennedy playing with his daughter in the Oval Office. I think they were sort of romping around the carpet or something, and the caption read, "Caroline holds up government," because his daughter, of course, it was Caroline Kennedy, just this little girl. "Caroline holds up government." He said, "That's it. That's the name. I'm going to call it Radio Caroline."
Okay. Yeah.
So it was named after Caroline Kennedy.
And I wonder if you ever met her.
I don't know, but I contacted her a few years ago and told her this story, and she was very surprised. She said, "I had no idea that it was named after me. That's wonderful." She was quite interested to hear that she was her name was the source of the radio station.
In fact, Radio Caroline exists today.
Yeah.
At radiocaroline.co.uk.
Yeah. Oh yes. It's also broadcast via Sky Satellite over the whole of the UK, and it's also relayed to an FM station in the Mediterranean called the Rock. So it's on 88, I think it's 88.5 FM for the French and Italian Riviera. They still have a ship which is in dock now on in Kent. And on the just last weekend, because every Easter weekend is an anniversary of the start of Radio Caroline, and this last weekend being Easter, they were all broadcasting actually from the ship itself, and they were inviting the public to come on board and visit and so on.
So you were back in 2005 and then retired in 2007?
Yeah, yeah.
With your son?
That's right.
Is he there still?
Yes, my son is still on Caroline. I by the time I got to 2007, I said, "That's enough. Here you are. You take the reins," and he's taken them over, and he's doing a show on it now.
It started on Easter, and you retired on Easter.
Yeah. My last show, what I did is I took excerpts from my book, The Ship That Rocked the World, that's coming out soon, and I read those. Sort of, and played songs, and I made my last show to be a combination of excerpts from my book and also the songs of the day. You know, an interesting thing happened on Monday, Easter Monday. I was listening on the internet to Radio Caroline in England, and I was enjoying their music. So I emailed them, and I said, "I'm really enjoying what you're playing."
Yeah.
And then I heard them come on the air, and they talked about my email, and the fellow there, he said, "You know, in 1964, I had sent a request in to Tom Lodge on Radio Caroline for the Rolling Stones' The Last Time, and he played that. So right now, I'm on Caroline, and Tom Lodge is listening. I'm going to play the Rolling Stones' The Last Time." So the circle was complete.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last time, last time.
Yeah, this will be the last time, Rolling Stone.
I was trying to get the best Rolling Stones. I got The Who, but... and I also wanted...
Oh, The Who, yeah. I remember when The Who's first record came out, I Can't Explain, and it came on board, and no one liked it. And I was the only one that liked it, And they all said, oh, no, it's just too raw and too it's not really good. And so I said, no, I'm going to play it. So I started to play I Can't Explain, and then Anyway, Anyhow, Anywhere. And I broke the Who, and I got a note from Pete Townsend a few weeks ago, and he said, and this is an exact quote, he said, without Radio Caroline, we would not have sold a single record. So Pete Townsend really recognizes how Radio Caroline made the Who happen.
Well, I'm trying to find. I can't explain right now. I don't know if I can find it, but
can you? Yeah.
Can you spell right? Yeah.
I can't.
And the ship that rocked the world is coming out. Was that written a couple of years back, or is it brand new?
I tell you, it's kind of a long story. Back in the 90s, I wrote a screenplay called The Ship That Rocked the World, which was the one that Universal, well, Richard Curtis sort of stole and used bits and pieces and created that silly film called Pirate Radio, or in England it was called The Boat That Rocked. But then I started to write bits and pieces for an online place called the Pirate Radio Hall of Fame, and slowly I put together. Then I put out a short book called The Ship That Rocked the World a few years ago, and then this publisher out east said, you know, you got to explain more what happened there and how did that feel? And when you're interviewing the Beatles, what were they doing and what did they look like? And put more of that in. So I expanded it. So the current book that's coming out in a few weeks is quite a lengthy book. I mean, it really goes into a lot of my personal experiences. And everybody that's read it so far says it's excellent reading.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, the subtitle is it's called The Ship That Rocked the World, and then the subtitle is How Radio Caroline Defied the Establishment, Launched the British Invasion, and Made the Planet Safe for Rock and Roll. So that's the subtitle. So that's new. But it tells the true story because, you know, this movie, Pirate Radio, implied that there was a lot of middle-aged people. We were all just kids in our 20s on board. We all had, no one's waist was more than 32 inches, and these guys had pot bellies, and, you know, I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman, that was, we had nobody like that on board. and they made it in the film as if partying was where it was at. No, it was the music. We never had any parties on board. We weren't interested in having parties. We just loved the music that was happening and being at sea and broadcasting. That was our whole thing.
And that was the real part of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the film doesn't depict at all what we were doing or what it was like.
Yeah, the film didn't succeed financially.
Well, it shouldn't because it was a silly film.
Yeah, mixed reviews on that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if this will go now. And this is, I can't explain.
I know what it means, but can't explain. I think it's love.
No, I...
Yeah, that's great. That was the can explain. Hey, do you happen to have in your collection Georgie Fame with a song called Yeah Yeah? Because if you do, that was what caused...
I don't know.
...caused the... really caused Radio Caroline. See, what happened was that Ronan, who started Radio Caroline, had this this club in London called The Scene, and he would have these young bands play there. That was where the Rolling Stones first started. In fact, he bought the Rolling Stones their first sound system and the amplifiers and so on. And he came across this young fellow, Georgie Fame, playing this organ in these other clubs. And he says, "Listen," he said, "I want to record you. Will you let me record you? We'll make a demo and we'll get it out to the record companies." So he said, "Sure." So he made this demo recording and went around to all the record companies in England at that time, and they all said, no, we won't play it. It's too black. No, we won't play it," because he was kind of a bluesy organ player kind of music, and no, they weren't interested. So Ronan decided, "Well, I'm going to press it myself." So he made some 45s from this song, and then he went around to the BBC and said, will you play my song?" And they said, no, it's too black. We won't play that." So the only thing was left was there was this radio station in the country of Luxembourg over beyond France there that was owned by this Englishman who used to broadcast in the evening and sell time to record companies that play 1 minute of each record, and the record companies would pay. It was a way of them promoting their records so that they would sell the records. And so he went to Radio Luxembourg, and he tells the receptionist when he's going in, and he's got this strong Irish accent, and he's got this package under his arm. He says, "Which way to Sir Geoffrey Everett's office?" And he assumes that the receptionist thought he was a courier because she points to this door. So he goes right in to the office, and there's three desks in a row. And there's a big desk in the middle and two desks on each side. And there's a person at each desk, and there's a couch. And he walks in and flops down on the couch. And they said, "Yes, what can we do for you?" He said, "Well, I've come for you to play my record." And they all burst out laughing. And Sir Geoffrey Everett goes up, pulls a curtain, and it says 6 o'clock Decca Records, 6:30 EMI, and so on all the way to 1 o'clock. And he says, "See, we've got no room for your record." So Ronan says, "We'll have to start my own radio station, won't I?"
Yeah.
He says, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "Well, you've got one in Luxembourg. I'll put one in France." And he walks out, and then he has to start thinking, "How am I going to do that? I've got to start a radio station to play my record." And so eventually the idea comes of a ship in international waters, because then he's not breaking any laws, because he's outside of the jurisdiction of the country. And his father owned a little seaport in Southern Ireland called Greenore. And so he was able to hustle money up from different people from the city of London, particularly a fellow called Jocelyn Stevens, who ran a fashion magazine called Queen's, and bought this Danish ferry ship and put it and took it to Ireland and rigged it out as a radio station with the big mast and the studio and the whole thing. And so he could play his record of Georgie Fame. Yeah, yeah. You don't have it, do you?
Georgie, F-A, I have...
F-A-M-E, just
yeah.
Fame, Georgie Fame.
Yeah.
Or Yeah, Yeah. Do you have it?
No.
No, okay.
But
anyway, so that was the origin of Radio Caroline. So then what happened was, after we'd been on in the air a short time...
I guess I was fibbing. I found it.
Oh, you found it. Great.
So let's try.
Yeah. Let's hear it. You can hear the kind of music that we were sort of really into with this record.
All right. This is... Yeah, yeah.
That's what I say. My baby loves me. She gets the feeling so fine. So when she loves me, she's a good. And when she kisses, I feel the fire.
You've got a live version of it when you did a concert.
Yeah.
The original version was recorded back then in 1962 or 63, and it's very very similar without the audience, and that was the impetus that created Radio Caroline. Yeah. That's great. Fun song, right?
That was.
Yeah. And then When we joined up with another ship, which originally was Radio Atlanta, which became Radio Caroline South, I was on the original Caroline, and the decision was to sail up to the Isle of Man. We had to go all the way around England to do that. And so while we were sailing around England, we were broadcasting. We were just 3.5 miles from the coast, so we were in international waters.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the morning when we were coming around the south coast, it was a summer sunny day, and so I knew the English people at that time of year were at what they called the seaside on the beaches and so on. So I said, anyone on the beaches there, get your cosmetic mirror out of your purse and flash the sun at us, and suddenly the whole beach just started to twinkle. It must have been thousands of mirrors, of people flashing their mirrors at our ship. I said, you can't miss us with a ship with the big, big mast. I mean, we really stood out as being different from any other ship with our huge mast. And then I went up on the bridge, and I got a mirror, and I was flashing the sun back to the beach. So we had this going, and of course they were listening to the radio, because, the transistor radio had come out then, the small radio, which was a relatively new thing, and so everybody on the beach was listening to us. We sailed by, and then when nighttime came, I said, if you can get a car that'll face out into the ocean, flash your headlights. And then that was happening along the coast at night. We got all these flashing headlights at us as we went around the coast, and then next morning we were off Wales, and it was a Sunday morning. And there was a big tradition then about reading Sunday newspapers and so on, and all the newspapers had their big Sunday versions with magazines and everything. And I said on the air, oh, it's such a shame I don't have my Sunday newspaper or something like that. And within 20 minutes or half an hour, a speedboat came out and threw a whole bunch on board. Just suddenly came out from the coast. This was what was happening. I mean, it was just extraordinary how many thousands of people were following us around the coast and interacting with us. This is 1964. Yeah, and then eventually we get to the Isle of Man. And so I start talking to the Isle of Man, and they're saying, well, I get no response. No flashing, no lights, nothing. I said, the Isle of Man, they don't like us. Gosh sakes, maybe we're, because this is where we were going to be, and we were we're anchoring off the Isle of Man, and we'd go in there, we'd fly from the Isle of Man down to London and so on our leave. And I thought, oh, that's terrible, they don't like us. And then I see this little canoe coming out from the shoreline, two guys paddling in this canoe coming out towards us. I said, wow.
Really?
Yeah, and I was fascinated. And one of the other DJs, a guy called Jerry Layton, and I, we were there, and the canoe comes alongside the boat, and the guy sort of reaches up with something in his hands, and he says, my wife wouldn't rest until I brought this to you. So we take it, and while we're sort of scrambling back up to take it, they just canoe off. They don't say anything at all. So we open the letter, and it's got some heather in it, and it says, welcome to the Isle of Man. So we knew we were welcome. But it was a different kind of reaction than we were getting from England. There was just a different culture. So there we were. That was Radio Caroline North off the Isle of Man, and that was quite an experience. Yeah.
Shall I play this little piece on YouTube? That's it's dialogues. It's a video of Radio Caroline,
great.
64 and 65.
Great.
That's how long it is?
I wonder if it's North Caroline North or Caroline South.
Yeah.
Yeah, most probably can't tell unless you know what they look like. Because the two ships were quite different in appearance. What happened in 65, another station.
Here it is.
Oh, yeah.
if you want to come in the middle of it, I'll pot it down.
Riding at anchor off Harwich and safely outside the three-mile limit, the innocent-looking ex-ferryboat Caroline is causing quite a stir in official circles. She's a floating broadcasting station, hoping to make a big thing out of commercial radio and waiting for the advertisements to roll in. I'm no pirate, insists Captain Mackay, even if the radio crew are. No danger to his ship so far. Generators supply power for the wireless transmitter. Caroline Radio is on the air 12 hours a day, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Between those hours, they think, there's a public large enough to attract local advertising revenue. Crew technicians have comfortable off-duty quarters, and to all indications, Caroline is a happy ship. The radio company believe it's all perfectly decent. In the ship's studio, they broadcast with no more concern than if it were all in Broadcasting House.
This is Radio Caroline on 199, England's first commercial radio station. My name's Simon D, with you for the next 2 hours. First one off the top of the pile, The Hollies, Rockin' Robin.
That's funny. And that was at the very beginning.
Yes.
And then we, after that, soon we went to 24 hours, but we started off with just 66, and then we went 24 hours. What happened in 65 is that a ship came from Texas.
Oh.
And sat off our south ship, and it was called Radio London. And they did very well, and so Ronan asked me to come down from the North ship and get the audience back from Radio London, because they had taken most of our audience. So I went down there, and I changed the whole sort of format and the music they were playing and the programming and the staff and everything. And by August of 66, we had 24 million listeners.
My God.
I think that's the largest audience to one transmitter ever in the history of radio.
Wow. What was your secret, Tom? This is Freedom. We met at the birthday concert.
Yeah. Hi. The format which I introduced, because I was competing against Radio London's Drake format, which is a very controlled type of format that plays the same things and so on over and again as like top 40 radio used to be. And what I introduced was, I said to the guys, you cannot prepare your show. I don't want you to prepare anyway. What I want you to do is gather all the records you might want to play, put them around you in the studio. We have a box there with the top 40. We have the new releases there in another box, and you can bring in all the LPs and 45s that you might want to play, and you can only choose the next record when the one before is playing. You have to be spontaneous.
You got to
really feel your show. You got to be one with it.
Interesting.
And that was that. See, the thing is, radio managers don't like DJs doing that because it's unpredictable. But I said, we got to be unpredictable. We got to be really part of what's happening in every moment. I said, that will connect us to the audience more than anything else. And it did, and it worked.
And it was still illegal at that point, and it's, no.
Well, we didn't have license or anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, Caroline doesn't have a license to this very day. It just, I mean, you can use satellite. If you work out a deal with a company, but actually broadcast license, it still never had a broadcast license.
I see.
Just like Free Radio Santa Cruz. Yeah.
I read that it became legal eventually, and it didn't explain it.
What happens is the British government will give groups a 28-day license called an RSL, Radio a Restricted Service License. And so we have got those from time to time, but they're very low wattage. I don't think they're even 100 watts.
That's like free radio.
Yeah, but that was legal. But of course, what we would do, being we would take the ship out for our 1 month broadcast, and the government fellow would come up and make sure our transmitter was limited, you know, to those wattage, but the moment it'd gone, we'd turn it up. and then when they'd come back, they said, you know, you're getting into London, you shouldn't get in London. That we said, oh, it's an effect caused by the ocean, by the water. You see, so as we saw their boat coming, we'd be slowly turning it down.
Did they ever try and bust you?
Ever try what?
What kind of move did the government make to try and stop you?
Oh, well, I met this fellow a few years ago in Vancouver, and a friend of mine took me to meet him. His name was Colin Hall, and Colin Hall tells me, he said, you know, back in the 60s, I was with MI5, which is kind of like the American CIA,
mm-hmm.
And I said, where were you stationed? He said, in Ireland. He said, I got this call from Brigadier General George Dixon, and on the phone, and George Dixon says, listen, Colin, I want you to go and get these SAS boys, which is kind of like the SWAT teams,
mm-hmm.
these SAS boys, and this helicopter, and I want you to board that ship out there making that horrible noise and get them off the air. And Colin Hall said to him, sir, I can't do that. He said, why? Because all the SAS boys are fans of Radio Caroline. So we were saved. That was October 1965, he told me, that he'd been instructed to get rid of us. But that failed. And then once we were on the air, this was 1966, and I look out the porthole, and I see the Royal Navy was heading towards us, the whole fleet of these battleships or whatever they were, destroyers or coming our way. And so I go, at that time there was a fellow called Dave Lee Travis was on the air, and I said, Dave, I said I'm going to tell you the names of the ships, you talk to them, to the, say their names and talk to the sailors on board and play records for them. So he did, and he would say the names of the ships and say hi fellows, and then he would the first song he played was Rolling Stones, Your 19th Nervous Breakdown.
All right.
It's just, yeah. So then eventually they because the whole country was listening. People would stop what they were doing and say, wow, they're being invaded by the Navy. Oh, listen to that. And so everybody stopped and listening to the radio. And because we were exposing everything and giving all the names, they just turned around and left. Yeah. But then in February of 66, we were in this huge storm. And I was doing the morning show at that time, 6 to 9. And so I'd gone to bed early. And then one of the DJs comes and wakes me up. He says, the captain says, everybody up in the lounge. And we were always playing jokes on each other. I mean, incredible jokes, like everything from chasing each other around to practical jokes that we could think up. So I thought, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. Captain says that these guys are just messing me about. So I said, no. I went back to sleep. And then soon another DJ comes. No. He said, this is serious. The captain says, everybody up in the lounge. So I thought, okay, I'll play along with the game. So I got dressed in my shore clothes and came up and said, okay, fellows, I'll meet you in the pub. Last one in. And then I suddenly looked outside and I realized all the shore lights looked different. And then I saw, then the crew was rushing around and they were Dutch. And they would say, Godverdomme, which is a swear word. So I knew something was wrong. And so I go up on the bridge and say, what's happened to the captain? And he says, well, our barnacles, our propeller is covered in barnacles. We've broken our chain, and we can't get any leverage on the water. We're in this storm, and we're being blown onto shore.
Wow.
So all you can do is hang tight. We don't know what's going to happen. And we've told the lifeboat people that we're being blown onto shore. So I make sure we go off the air because I don't want to be broadcasting inside the limits.
Right.
And then I go down to Dave and I say, well, there's nothing we can do. We want to have a game of checkers? So Dave says, sure. And he was always beating me in checkers. So I was trying to figure out how I could beat him. And we were having this great game. And I was at last going to beat him. And suddenly the board goes flying as we crash onto the beach. And it was in the night, and there was snow on the beach, and there's all these people and lights and so on. And then through a megaphone, somebody shouts and said, "Stack, get off the deck there. We're going to fire a rope." So with some kind of a gun system, they fire a rope that the crew catch, and they set up this pulley system, and we get into this thing which is called a breeches buoy. It's like a circle, like a buoy with a pair of shorts attached to it. You get into this thing, and then you're hauled off. And, of course, as you're going, you're ducked in because the water was huge. I mean, the waves are kind of massive waves, and you were dunked into the water as you're being hauled off. And so we all got off the ship that way. And then some policeman comes with a hot cup of tea. Said, here are my hearty, have a cup of tea. And then they go and get us dry clothes and put us up in a hotel. And then next day I go out to see how the ship is. And it's really strange. In England, they have what they call these groins, these concrete things that stick out at 90 degrees to the beach to stop the sand from being washed away. And we were parked directly between them. If we'd hit one of these, it would really smash our boat to pieces. We were parked sideways. We had no keel, so it just was sitting sideways there on the beach. And so the ship was fine. Eventually they pulled it off and fixed any damage and went back on the air.
Wow.
Yeah, that was quite a shipwreck.
And it was in disrepair for how long?
Yeah, a few months.
And
we were lent this other ship by this Swedish woman,
mm-hmm.
and she lent us this broadcast ship. So we went back on the air on that ship instead, Radio Sud, so that we were able to keep broadcasting.
How long were you on the boat at a time?
Well, the schedule was 2 weeks on and 1 week ashore,
uh-huh.
But that very rarely happened. Because because of weather or because your replacement wasn't available, or there was all kinds of other things that stopped it from being. being, but that was what they were trying to get us to do. So we'd be ashore for 1 week, and in that week we'd go and do concerts and things.
DJing?
Yeah, I emceed for the Rolling Stones.
Cool.
And, I interviewed the Beatles, and I remember once I was in Caroline House and getting into the elevator, and in the elevator comes Eric Burdon from the Animals, and I said, "Hi, oh, it's great to see you." And he pulls out of his bag there. He's got this sort of satchel on his shoulder. Put that satchel. Look what I just got, and it's a Smith and Wesson 45 revolver. They're not allowed in England, you know. They don't have any firearms in England. Mm-hmm. I said, "What do you want that for?" He said, "Oh, I just love guns." So that was my time with Eric Burdon.
Did you get any bands on ship?
Well, they would come out to do an interview, but they never played on the ship. I mean, I remember Pete Noon came out to Caroline North from Herman's Hermits.
Yeah.
And but I tried to get the Beatles out there, but I remember John Lennon saying, you know, if we went out there, George here would be sick all over your turntables. You know, they just didn't want to be at sea. I mean, some people just don't like to be in a moving vessel, you know, get seasick.
Whereas you had been familiar with the sea, having been fisherman.
Yes. I mean, I just love the ocean. I have, in fact, crossed the ocean 11 times on ocean liners. This is not sort of cruises. These are just like one of them was a Greek emigrant ship when I was 18, and when I was four, we crossed the ocean when the Second World War broke out. So I've been on the sea a lot, and I just have a great love for the ocean. In fact, I think you guys should put a ship off the coast of Santa Cruz. And
we talked about that. Oh, not us.
Yeah.
Some of us have.
I think it's a 200-mile limit, though, here.
Well, that's okay. Just have a big enough transmitter.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, changed your name, didn't you, too?
Yeah, well, I'm living in a Zen community here, and that's my Zen name.
The sea, yeah.
What is
That's
the
wonderful.
Sound of one hand clapping, Tom?
I'm sorry?
What is the sound of one hand clapping?
there
a lot of money in the radio for you?
Did I earn a lot of money?
Yeah. I mean,
No. It was just a tremendous love affair. I had a small salary. I mean, I had three kids. You know, I was married and three kids. And I could support that. But it was a simple life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We weren't movie stars, even though we were treated like them as far as the public was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a pretty costly thing running a ship.
Yeah.
You know, so that took most of the advertising.
Take care of the ship.
Yeah.
And sailor's life.
Yeah, and that's why I call my book "The Ship That Rocked the World," because it disturbed a lot of establishments, so it rocked that. Of course, it was on the ocean rocking, and it was rock and roll, so that's...
Yeah, rock and roll on the rock, out in the ocean waves, rocking and rolling.
Yeah, I mean, that was... My two passions came together, music and the ocean. Just perfect.
Are you going to have a book signing downtown?
Oh, yes. As soon as the book comes out, I'll have a book signing. I'm not sure which bookstores, but maybe Capitola and maybe the one on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz, and maybe over in Aptos. Maybe we'll have three. I don't know.
Yay. Could we talk to you after that?
You sure can.
Be wonderful.
Very welcome.
I found this theme song from Thelonious Monk, although I don't know which version you used to play, but...
After Midnight?
Around Midnight.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that sounds now.
Okay.
We want to thank you for coming on.
Well, I'm very, very grateful to be on. I've enjoyed speaking with you, and I've also hope your listeners enjoyed the story. And this was quite an adventure.
Yes, I was glad to have you tell it here, and I'll be putting it on again. And
great.
Anyone?
Thank you.
Anyone wants to comment? Call in right now, and also you can tell us at Free Radio at 427-4523.
Okay.
Thelonious. Okay.
We used to play that at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the daytime theme was Booker T and the MGs and Green Onions.
Oh, Green Onions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking for Rinky Dink.
Oh, Rinky Dink. That was my theme song, yes.
Oh.
The Johnny Howard Band version.
Johnny Howard.
Yeah, I used to play that at the beginning and the end of every show I did. Rinky Dink by the Johnny Howard Band.
Well, I'll have that ready for you next time.
Yes, great.
Johnny's fine. So we've been talking with Tom Lodge, and he's in the area, but he had quite a background living in England in the 60s and being part of the revolution, which is pirate radio. And you can get Tom Lodge's book. You can first advance order it. How would you like people to know?
Yeah, they can go to Amazon.com and make an advance order for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. But he knows that one.
We can actually do it.
It's my pleasure having met one of the first real pirates on the radio.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you, and have a good night.
You too. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
So I was really glad to have this as part of the Tangerine Dream Team show. And I hope that next week we'll have another wonderful musical show. And if you have any thoughts, call me 427-3772 or 427-4523. This has been Coral Reef. And
before you go, Coral, I'd like to make an announcement that in the Sinister Singing cases, Michelle's case was up trial today, and the police and the arresting citizen did not show, so her charges were dismissed, and she's a free woman with no $445 charge.
You can sing Carte Blanche on Pacific Avenue anytime, anywhere. Maybe out on a boat if we get one. And her father was an admiral in the Navy, so I think she'd be happy to sing anywhere now.